Blog Talk Radio.
Here we go, ladies and gentlemen, across the country, the most talked about, the most must-hear radio show on Saturdays, the Doc Talk Podcast, hosted by a brother, a mentor, a friend, Dr. Greg Roscoe in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, yours truly 2,500 miles to the west in Los Angeles, Mark Mancini producing this thing. 347-205-9631. If you happen to miss it, 60 minutes goes quicker than 60 minutes with Dan Rather. Catch the archive version, blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports Podcast platforms, wherever you subscribe to podcasts, powered now by Mancini Media. So without further ado, more of him, less of me. Let me lay the red carpet, put the podium in its place, hand off the mic. Dr. Threes, how are you? How can people get a hold of you? And you're surrounded by the ladies today. I know you got one in. You were waiting on the other one. I'll man the boards and check with you in 28 minutes, my friend.
I want to thank you very much, Mark. And, again, the introduction is super. We have a great show today, really an uplifting show. Since we, you know, have started our cancer series, I wanted to bring in some hope, some empowerment, to how people can get well and be on the road to recovery, just not talking about this malady. So today we're going to go ahead, and we have a friend of the show. She is a superstar. She has several of her own shows with a TV show, so she is a celebrity, and that's Miss Marianne Costello. So, Marianne, welcome, and if listeners want to get a hold of me, gjrmd308@outlook.com. Today's show has to do with when one hears about a cancer diagnosis. When they're at the doctor's, they're at their provider, and they have news now that they do have a cancer of one of their organs. You know, we talk about, you know, their feelings, you know, what goes through their head, what emotions are they experiencing. You know, in addition, there is, of course, therapy for many of these maladies, and sometimes they don't think about all those. But there is a mixed bag of feelings, no doubt, that people experience at that time in their lives. And I wanted to bring that to fore a little bit today to talk about what are they experiencing? You know, what happens here? And, you know, what maybe fears do they have, or are there disbeliefs? Are they worried about their imminent death? But we have a holistic nurse, Marianne Costello, that's going to talk about, hey, it's not the end of the line. That, you know what, there are some things that we can do. We can make your life better, and not just your life, but also your caretaker. And, you know, as far as just we talk about our health, many, 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 many years ago, there was a fella by the name of Hippocrates. And, you know, he said, and it's documented in many places, a man should consider health his greatest blessing. And that's so true even today, that our health is such a blessing that we want to protect it. We want to prevent disease. If we happen to get hit with a malady, how can we go ahead and make our body strong again? And that's why we have Marianne on. And Marianne, good morning. Thank you very much for sharing your Saturday morning with us. We may have an additional holistic provider, and that's Marilyn Morales. Now, currently, she is in Puerto Rico. She may not be able to get on the lines this morning, but if she is, welcome. But I'd like to start with Marianne. Marianne, give us a little bit of your background again, please, all the things that you do, and then we'll get into the topic, okay? Welcome.
Thank you so much. Again, I'm Marianne Costello, that's right, and I am a board-certified holistic healthcare practitioner and a licensed massage therapist specializing in medical massage. I work with people doing nutrition, homeopathy, food enzymes, muscle testing to see what's going on, and I deal with this type of thing almost every day, unfortunately, but I'm here to tell people that how do you cope with a cancer diagnosis? When you first hear it, I think that you might feel anxious. Some people are afraid. Some people are in denial. Some people are overwhelmed. Or most of all, they have a loss of hope. And what this show is going to bring you today is that there's not a loss of hope for you or your loved ones around you that are dealing with this whole issue. And I'd like to get into, if we can, it's that illness, once you hear about it, it can be very exhausting. And it's not just in the physical sense. It's when someone learns they have a chronic disease, like cancer or another condition, it can be life-altering. And many feel like their prior sense of comfort, their joy, their connection with the world is somehow violated. And it can often create feelings of chaos, confusion, and it can lead to complete mental overload. And not to mention mental exhaustion, because there's doctor's visits, there's treatments, there's possible complications, there's insurance and financial concerns. You have appointments with specialists. And there's excessive online information that people want to go right to the web and start doing things. And sometimes Dr. Google is not the only answer. And it also can make you worried. And worrying about what the present and the future hold. Now, with all of these questions surrounding your diagnosis, it's like the person's new normal. It could bring a profound sense of emotional fatigue. And when you're dealing with this kind of fatigue, it means a person is likely experiencing like really difficult thoughts, difficult feelings, attitudes. And just as the fatigue itself can be a result of mental exhaustion, the response to maybe a matter of mental conditioning and how to cope with chronic illness and the psychological fatigue it may bring. So that's what I'd like to discuss with you today, Dr. Roscoe.
Beautiful. Those are beautiful thoughts. You know, again, as far as that concept, tremendous. And, you know, Marianne, when someone gets that diagnosis that, you know, I do have cancer of my breast, of my prostate, of my lung, or whatever it might be, or I have lymphoma, you know, do they think about spiritual healing to start with, or is that something down the line? Is it more overall they're thinking, oh, my God, you know, is it chemotherapy? Is it radiation? Is it stem cells? You know, they start to think along those lines. How do we get them involved, Marianne? How do we get education here to allow these people to say, hey, there is also spiritual help that's necessary? You want to pick that up also?
Sure. The first thing is that along with spiritual health is attitude, because attitude can make a difference. So how a person copes with the bad news isn't just about the bad news itself. The person's own thoughts and their perceptions make a big difference as well. It's our attitude that may determine how resilient or not resilient we are and how we react to our health crisis. And I'm going to say that again because it's very important. It's our attitude that may determine how resilient or not resilient we are or how we react to our illness. So there's certain traits that can help you cope better with illness. And one of those is flexibility. Maintaining a flexible mindset can give you a better capacity for resilience. So maybe flexibility isn't your thing, but the good news is it can be learned. So you start by mixing up your routine. It could be writing with your non-dominant hand, taking a different route to work, or shopping at an off-beaten path store. And these simple and these small experiments are activities that can help you enhance your flexibility. And you know what happens? It turns into a skill, because you're going to need that skill to help you with resiliency. So it is about attitude. And thing about spirituality, you have to cultivate gratitude. So how do you create gratitude? It could become a habit if you do this every day. You keep a journal and you write down three things each day that they appreciate. So they could be simple things. It could be like the sunrise. It could be a beautiful meal you have, a smell of a flower you like, something. And it really makes a difference. And when you are challenged with this life circumstance that's like beyond your control, or that you feel that it is, a dose of appreciation can help change your outlook. And that is where the spiritual side comes in. Because some people believe in prayer. Some people find their own self-being, or they're already lost because they're so overwhelmed by this. And there's key things that you can do to empower yourself. And I think empowerment is the biggest key to this, because just because you have heard this diagnosis, it does not automatically mean a death sentence. And I think that's where the confusion is, because you hear cancer and you're like, oh, how much time do I have? And I know when you're with all the specialists and your healthcare providers, they do talk realistically about things, but it does not mean that is your fate. What I mean by that is you can help your mind heal your body. You don't have to focus on the negativity of the cancer. You can focus on the positivity. How do I mean that? How do you empower yourself? First, you have to take care of yourself. When you're exhausted mentally and physically, everything feels a lot more difficult. So, like, at some days, a cheeseburger might sound better than a salad, or making it to the gym might seem like a feat of impossible strength. And if you're stressed and worried, even getting a full night's sleep can sound like it's a fantasy despite your exhaustion. But it's important,
sure,
and I say utmost important, to strive for a healthy routine. You need that healthy routine. Because no matter your circumstances.
Marianne. Yeah, I mean, I think this is great. I know you have more to say about that. I think they're excellent points. You know, Marianne, how do we get our patients involved to think along these lines? You know, what's that bridge between I have breast cancer now and bingo, I want to start to have mental fitness. I want my body to heal itself. How do we get them to think like that? You know, the implementation of this, that I think is so very important, which I know you can help handle, but how do we bridge that? Go ahead.
Well, you can start by lowering your stress levels. How can you do that? You can bring in mindful meditation as a way to manage stress. And you don't have to go to meditation studios and all that. There's so many things and different apps available that help you practice mindfulness in your home and throughout the day. I also think an important part besides, you know, just how we're going to go into diet and stuff like that, you have to spend time with others. Because if you're bringing around other people, they can bring you more understanding. They can inform you of your own journey. So if you're going to want to go exercise, which is really good if you go out to do it and be with other people, they can help you cope with what's going on with yourself. Or you get that little absence of mind, I'm doing something for my own body to make it feel good and to help myself. And there's times where people might be in pain and don't even feel like going for even, say, a 30-minute walk. But if you force yourself to go outside to do that 30-minute walk, you're in nature, you could be talking with a friend, or you could go by yourself listening to some of these apps I'm talking about. And you have to be the person that has to drive that, because you want to beat your diagnosis. And you can. Many people can. Because cancer, it's linked as a disease, but in holistic care, it's dis-ease, okay? Dis-ease in the body, it's a symptom of something else. Maybe a primary pathway is blocked, which you can note that by empowering yourself. How do you empower yourself? It's a taboo topic, but look at your bowel movements. If you look at your bowel movements every day, color, structure, everything could tell you what's going on the inside. And that could tell you, as you're getting better, things that you see, your body will whisper before it cries. Now it's crying. You might not have listened to little things. Things on your skin could give you a hint. Wait a minute, you know what? I might have something else going on, depending where it is. Say it's like, you know, you're having a bad acne outbreak or something. Is it from the medicine? Is it from the diet I'm eating? Is it from the stress I'm having? And you just look at it. And most importantly, a way to start is to look in the mirror and do self-love. And what I mean by self-love, when people are really in denial because they're frustrated with their diagnosis, they start losing love. And in order to have love, you have to have self-love. So how can you do that? It's one of the hardest things to do. You can go into your bathroom. You can look at yourself in the mirror. And don't look at anything else but your eyes. Look directly into your eyes and tell yourself, I love you. And say your name.
Wow.
So in my case, I love you, Marianne. I love you for this. I love you for that. And it's a hard exercise to do because everybody wants to look away. Because you know what happens? People want to start looking at their flaws. They're in a mirror. They're saying, oh, well, that's sagging, or maybe that should be better or whatever. And what does that do? When you start doing that, that's called self-doubt. That is called really unapproachable self-talk sure. about yourself. And that gets you back into a depressive state. And what you want to do is concentrate on self. Self-love will be able to empower you. And when you are empowered, you'd be surprised how positive your body can react, because the scare, the shock, the denial, everything is away. You're now empowering yourself to deal with it. So how do you deal with it? Here's the thing. When you go to the doctors and the healthcare workers, they start using scary words, okay, in your cancer journey. They could use things like, oh, this is used in a clinical trial. What grade is my cancer? What stage do sure. I have it in? You know, and you don't know what they are. And then you hear the word malignant, you know, and you're like, oh, my God, what does that mean? That, you know, but if you
right.
learn, and how can you do that? You can ask and have conversations with your treatment team. Your caregiver can understand that. Your loved ones can understand. But most of all, we all have access to the Internet, or go to your local library and look up what these terms mean, and either print them out so you have them, so you, if it comes up again, you don't forget. You can even keep yourself like a little notebook, you know, what you're printing out of your own research, so you have your own reference manual when you're in those moments that you need it. And I think asking the right questions to your healthcare provider so you understand your diagnosis, like what kind of cancer do I have? Where is it? Has it spread? How can it be treated?
Right.
And then what happens if I don't get treatment, or how likely are my children
sure.
or other families to get it? Because, you know, heredity starts going into place. You get those types of questions answered, and now you're empowering yourself. So now you're at the doctor, you found out your cancer diagnosis, you found out the answers to your questions. Now you're getting your attitude to say, I can do this. I can make myself well.
Sure.
And now you're onto the step, like you're saying, empowerment. Get yourself out for the physical walk. Now get yourself, you know, for all what all the terms can mean, and look it up. And if you don't know where to look it up, you could go to sites like cancer.gov, and they have online dictionaries of cancer terms and where you can search for them or look them up alphabetically. So this way it takes the fear out of big words you may not understand. Another
Excellent.
Good thing to keep in plan.
Go ahead.
You have to keep your sense of humor. Humor is, laughter is the best medicine. It can rejuvenate the liver. It can do all kinds of things. And it's very uplifting. And people might get depressed because if they're going through treatment, depending what that treatment is, if they're going through chemotherapy and radiation, all of a sudden they might be in the shower and then they lose their hair. And that could be very depressing because they see the physical ailments
yes.
are starting to change while they're treating their body to become healthy. Not because, oh, my God, look what this is doing to me. Look at it as this is helping my body get healthy, out with the old and with the new, kind of speaking. And I tell people, like, if you're worried about your appearance, especially women, if you don't want to wear, you know, a kerchief over your head and things like that, there's so many stores out there, and you could actually have fun doing it, where you could even buy a wig, change your hair color every
sure.
day. Who cares? And I tell people when they come in my office, you know, you're part of the WWF. And they're saying, what are you talking about? I don't like the World Wrestling Federation. I said,
yes.
no, you're part of being the wig-wearing fool crowd, the WWF. And I said, and have
wow.
fun doing it. And it's funny.
Because
you could be a
that.
Different.
Yeah, great. You know, Marianne, you've given us a lot of tools in a toolbox for our patients. And, you know, as far as you mentioned about our providers, and I think a very important part of getting to that point with spiritual health, do we need to emphasize more education on the provider side of this, that the nurse practitioners for oncology or the PAs or the oncologists, do they need to be a little more involved, have a little more reality on the emotional side of treating these cancer patients? Do you think there's room for education in their lives that they may be better able to get a good result, but using other means and also dealing with spirituality? Do you think there's room that education needs to be done there?
Absolutely, because I think that everybody has to be involved, because I think it's like East meets West in medicine. So you're having the medical teams care for you, but at the same time, you have to know about nutrition, things that can help you every day, because if you improve that gut health, then you can help stop things from attacking normal cells and attach to free radicals that do that, and we could go over that. But I think diet is a big one. I think other modalities like Reiki. I see Reiki. People even use Reiki before any kind of surgery.
Let's not give away the show now. That's our last 15 minutes treatment. We don't want to give that away yet, okay? We want to hold the listeners on edge here. We have that. We have some tools that we want to use to give to these patients and getting them better. And, you know, Marianne, I think in the first stages here, when someone hears cancer, and I think we may have talked about it a little bit in the pre-show, what do you think they hear? When they're told that I have cancer, you know, what goes through their head? You know, we know they may experience fear, disbelief, maybe even death, you know, that feeling. But what do you think they actually hear? You know, what goes through their head? You know, are there preconceived notions that they may have been thinking about due to family members that may have had a problem? You know, I think that's very important, setting the stage to go on for this. Don't you agree?
I do, and you are correct. What it is that people don't realize what they do from day-to-day activities can contribute to your health. And what do I mean by that? If you're on dealing with something emotional and you're not dealing with it, then you could take that emotion and manifest itself physically. What do I mean?
Yes.
What I mean is that take something even like a sore throat. If somebody has a sore throat, it's usually angry words that you are not communicating to somebody. And what's very interesting is the right side of your body is masculine energy and the left side is feminine energy. And I've had people do this where when I was in corporate, they would call out sick with a sore throat. And I would say, you know, what side is it on? And somebody turned around and said, oh, it's on the right side. It really hurts when I swallow. And the first thing I said is, do you have any angry words you're holding back, whether it's a spouse, a sibling, a loved one, anything that's of a male dominance? And the phone just got quiet. It was like that awkward silence. And then I hear this real quiet voice saying, how do you know that? And I said, because your body, where it's manifesting, is telling it to me. So take something like colon cancer. When you hear that cancer diagnosis, you have to look back. Am I holding on to old things, old thoughts that don't serve me? Am I holding on to old hurts? Mostly anger. Cancer could be about anger. It really is a lot of the times, because when cancer is angry, it could keep spreading and spreading. That's just, you know, a theoretical side of it. So if you have something like that, you know, what does a colon process? Stool. Are you holding on to your old stool, shall I say? thought process. If you're looking at kidney cancer, you know, urine is called another word. What am I mad at? What am I doing that's making me this way every day? You have to look at different things where the cancer shows up, because there's thought processes. Like you have something, pain in your back. People experience back pain all the time, think nothing of it. Well, if it's carrying up in your neck and shoulders, you got to ask yourself, is the whole world on my shoulders? Am I really overwhelmed with things? Is that why it's creating this pain? Or in the middle of the back, do I feel guilty about something? Am I guilty? Am I holding in a lot of guilt? And it's my own theory of why I'm feeling guilty, because guilt is really not an emotion. It's a feeling we put on ourselves. You know, it's not like happiness, sadness, and all. Guilt is not an emotion. It's something we give to ourselves. And then if you have like lower back, you're looking at financial issues, relationship issues, and you look at those, and that can give you an idea as an example of what could be going on with me mentally that now I never took care of. So my body was whispering, and now I'm crying. But, again, you can empower yourself. You can empower yourself to change your thought process, because your mind can heal your body. In other words, instead of saying every day, oh, I'm so sick, I'm so sick, I'm so sick. I know that you are. You're going through something. But instead, when somebody says how you're doing, I'm in perfect health. Keep telling yourself that. I'm in perfect health now. I'm in perfect health because If you have a thought and you don't experience that thought, meaning you don't say it out loud, you're not putting the thought into existence. So if you're in pain, don't say it. Instead, say, I'm in perfect health now. Why? Because now you put that thought into existence, and now that's going to your brain hears that in your subconscious mind, because it's literally hearing you say that, and you turn around and you say, I'm in perfect health. I have control. I'm in control. I'm empowered. Statements like that, because that can change your entire diagnosis. It really can. And I've seen it on many people happen.
Wow. So it's basically putting you as a patient in charge of your body's response to this insult. And you're telling your body, you know, continually that I'm in good health. I'm strong. I'm able to function. I can get through this. And your body believes that and then functions accordingly with regard to helping any healing, you know, et cetera, Marianne. So it's these thoughts our body, our brain generates spiritually heal our body.
Yes, that's correct. And that also creates positivity. And when you have positivity, you have gratitude. And in gratitude is where you can become an acceptance of what's going on with you. But then you start, that's what I think empowers you to start doing your own research, starting to take better care of yourself. And they say don't sweat the little thing. Well, make everything a little thing. Do you get what I'm saying? Like, because when you're sweating the big things, that's where your stress keeps happening on your body. And you want to be able, and this goes for anybody even without a cancer diagnosis, to say, I can empower myself today so I don't have to have that diagnosis, you know? And
so it's
to
more
start,
preventative as well.
Right, keeping a journal. A journal will keep you in touch with your emotions. It doesn't have to be a fancy journal. You could do bullet points if you're not into writing things down. And when I say a journal, I don't mean that I want you typing it. I want you to write it. Because when you write something, there is a mind-body connection as you're moving that pen or pencil along that piece of paper that is actually healing to yourself. And it doesn't have to be, you know, it could be random thoughts. It doesn't have to be complete sentences. This is for you. This is for you. Because sometimes when you start writing about something, all of a sudden you didn't realize something was bothering you, and all of a sudden it shows up on your paper, and you're like, wow, I didn't even know I was thinking about that.
What excellent points. You know, Marianne, what I'd like to do, Mr. Mancini is in the studio today, and we've got several callers. And, Mark, I know you're being inundated. Do you want to go ahead and start with a few questions, Mark, and comments?
Yeah, let me get a couple and let you get back to that interview as we wait for Marilyn to come through here on the assignment desk here in Los Angeles. Lance from Pensacola, Florida, an avid listener to your show, Doc. He's been across the board. He basically says, a lot of this stuff has to be a diet, more or less. I have some friends that are a little overweight, and they have to be put on a diet, more or less, to really lose the weight, because that is the big problem I see with this whole thing. Am I right on that, he says.
Marilyn, do you want to pick up diet right now? Yes.
Yeah, absolutely, because diet is huge. One of the most important and helpful tips for healthy eating, you have to have a well-stocked fridge and a well-stocked pantry. So when you have cabinets that are filled with high-quality, easy-to-prepare items, you're more likely to stick to healthy eating. And healthy eating is so easy. You don't have to rely on restaurants and fast food to fill yourself that, because all that food is loaded with sodium, saturated fat, preservatives. And with so many foods to choose from in your average grocery store, it could be a challenge. So what I tell people is start by cleaning out your kitchen. So before restocking your pantry or fridge with the better quality items, you take time to toss out expired or spoiled ingredients, clean up storage surfaces, clean out the fridge, like literally clean it out to say, I'm starting over. And you organizing your ingredients and all on a shopping list before you go helps you maintain everything that you want to buy. Now you're going to stock your pantry. So what helps in cancer? You're going to look at grains. What are grains? They're brown or wild rice. They could be quinoa. They're oatmeal. They're high fiber. They're complex carbohydrates. And they can be prepared in bulk, so that makes things really easy for people to have in the fridge as a leftover. You could have the legumes, your dry beans and lentils are fantastic. And if you don't have time to soak and cook them, canned beans are a good backup. And you look for those with no added salt, preferably. And then what you do is you can dump them in a colander and then just rinse all the salt off. So this way you can have them already prepared.
Wow.
Another good snacking thing are like nut products, like nuts roasted without salt. They're great options for a quick protein boost and only a little bit, because a big handful of nuts and a second handful of nuts and a third, that's where it gets really calorie heavy that you have to watch. But they're healthy fats. And you could choose
so
nuts
diet,
and nut butters.
Sure. So diet, as he Lance is talking about, we think is very important from a nutritional component to get our body also from that standpoint to heal, so that with our insults that we've received, say if we talk about that cancer diagnosis, we want our body to heal that cancer, plus heal the tissues once therapy has been started. Is that kind of the gist here, Marianne?
It is, but you also have to look and healthcare fails when it comes to is your gut health. You could be eating all the right things, but is your intestinal, your stomach and intestinal tract working properly to absorb all of the nutrients that you need?
And so
and
we have to make
that,
sure that we're on the right, yeah.
Yeah, because you could have, you could be eating celery and carrots, and that could be digesting as garbage in your system if you're, and you have to look at that because you're on different medications during these processes. And maybe you're not absorbing the right medication. And when you go to back to your doctor for something, all of a sudden they're saying, well, this isn't working. Let's increase the dose. Well, maybe you're not absorbing it. You have to look at that.
Because we know there is a drug interaction with our absorption. And especially with certain therapeutic agents, certain foods can inhibit the functionality of the drugs. So we need to make sure we're looking at that and then talking to our provider and or our dietitian to make sure that we're doing the right things so we're getting the therapy. And you're right. You don't want to continually increase this amount of drug usage, et cetera. But beautiful. Maybe we go on to another one, Mark.
Yeah, let me give you another quick one, then I'll let you get back to the interview. Robin, coming in from Warren, Ohio, and another avid listener says, kidney beans, are they good for you? Protein bars? It's funny you say that because I had cleaned out my pantry a couple months ago and got rid of all the canned soups. A lot of sodium in those things.
Okay.
Wow.
Go ahead, Marianne. Robin threw her cupboard away there. Go ahead.
Yes, kidney beans are good for you, and you can make them so many different ways. And like I said, dry beans and lentils are fantastic, and you can have canned beans, but preferably rinse off the salt if you're going to do that. Now, in regards to soup, yes, you would want to look for the more low-sodium soup. Canned soup does have a lot of sodium. Making your own soup, believe it or not, is quick and easy. You can make it in bulk, and then you can put it in little containers and keep them in your refrigerator for those go-to moments. So you have health and nutrition, and you can make it one time, and you could package it in little containers for yourself and have it throughout the week. And you could use low sodium to no sodium broth and then add a little bit of sodium if you have to. So
beautiful.
That would be a good idea.
You know, Marianne, as far as that topic here today, you know, we're talking about, of course, cancer. But then we want to talk a little bit, which we've gotten into already, which is kind of a side issue, nutritional healing, talking about our diet as well as then supplements as well to help heal our gut or heal our damaged body. What other tricks do you have, Marianne, with regard to foods? If we talk about fruits, what do you suggest in the fruit line?
Well, in the fruits, they should be the hallmark of all meal plans. They should be at every part. So you could choose in-season fresh produce because it maximizes the flavor. And you could stock up on frozen options to ensure you always have some produce on hand. But don't forget, you want to eat it in moderation, because as good as fruit is, it has high sugar. Certain fruits have more sugar than others.
Yes.
Like you have, you know, bananas could be high in sugar, but they're great in potassium. So you want to have a balance. Don't eat the whole, you know,
sure.
whole banana. Sometimes eat just a half and mix up your fruit. So if you have, say you wanted to have a half a banana and then have a couple of strawberries or berries, any type of berries and all. So this way you can make yourself like a little sorbet. But one thing to remember, if you like melon, whether it be honeydew or watermelon or, you know, cantaloupe, melons digest differently in the system because of their high sugar content. So if you don't want to gain weight or you want things to digest, you might want to eat melon in between a meal, then eat it with other fruits or other proteins, because it will store as fat on the body instead of being good for you. So that's why I said always be mindful. Fruits and veggies are always a good thing. But the main thing I really think you should have on hand is lean protein. Some people are like, what are lean proteins? That could be eggs. It could be Greek yogurt, cottage cheese, fish, chicken, lean cuts of beef, and they all can be purchased fresh or frozen. And you make sure to store these items, especially raw meat, on the bottom shelf of your fridge. So that way it separates them and reduces the chances of contamination with other foods. I think most of us know that, but it's always a good reminder.
Yes, that's a good point. Very good point.
And other things too, low sugar beverages. You know, you want to swap out the soda and other sugary beverage drinks for less sugar. And if you could have like herbal teas or make your own herbal iced tea or have unsweetened iced tea. And if you are a person that needs sweetness, sometimes you could try stevia. Stevia is better than sugar. But, you know, non-sweeteners, and they're finding out in studies, might contain aspartame, you know, and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So you might want to put a little bit of, you know, natural sugar, but only a little bit if you really need it. Or look
moderate.
At agave. Yes, and look at agave and look at honey. They're all sweeteners that you could use a little bit and be healthier. And another great thing to remember, people love to snack. So keep dips and dressings like hummus and guacamole or pesto. Or if you're going to eat salad, have olive oil-based salad dressings. They're great ways to add flavor and nutritional value to snacks and meals. And they increase your veggie intake because you're dipping them, you know, you're doing veggies instead of grabbing that bag of chips, you know. Remember, some people during treatment might have appetite loss. So sometimes higher calorie dips made with cheese or beans or sour cream, they could be especially helpful for those people specifically with the appetite loss.
And also their taste could change, Marianne. So foods don't taste as good, and indeed they lose their appetite secondary to that. But the great discussion on this, you know, if we talk about, again, nutritional healing and body healing from the supplement standpoint, what are your thoughts along that? You know, what supplements should people be on? Do you have kind of a full box full of those that you like to talk about?
Yes. Of course, before you take any vitamins, you would talk with your healthcare professional, because every diagnosis and everybody's body is different. So please start with that. But you would want to make sure that you have your vitamins. You know, some multivitamins are good out there, and they also contain some fruits and veggies in them as well. So you could get the best of both worlds. Sometimes a supplement with greens. If you're not getting enough green leafy vegetables, because, say, your liver, with all the treatment, could become toxic, and you want to keep that as healthy as possible and be, you know, this power boost for it. So if you're not eating green leafy vegetables, you know, like kale and spinach or even lots of salads and things like that, you can get a supplement that's called, like, green supplements. Some are liquid, some are pill form, depending on your digestion and your, you know, your comfort level in your gut. You might want to look at something like that. And most of all, you're going to look at that intestinal tract, because your small intestine is where you digest your nutrients. And probiotics are very, very good, because they help balance the good bacteria and bad bacteria. And usually with the probiotic, you know, after certain ages, you might want to add a prebiotic in there. And you can do that by looking at the label. If it has, like, lactobacillus, and it'll say lacto, like 13, 14 different times, that's usually for the small intestine. And then you have like bifidophilus, and it'll say bif, 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 all this stuff. That's for the large intestine. So if you find a nice probiotic that has both lacto and bifo in it, that's the easy way to look at it if you're not familiar with it, to get a good supplement for the gut. Sometimes you might need a digestive enzyme because that could be where the breakdown was to get the cancer. A lot of it is in the gut. That's where a lot of disease starts. So you might want to look at digestive enzymes, or as simple as eating pineapple too because of the bromelain, or get a bromelain supplement. So this way your food can help digest.
You know, with regard to talking about these aspects, I think the big thing is overall, some of these things are very hard for our patients to do on their own. And, you know, where do we go? Where do we send these people to get help for this, to help diagnose maybe these issues? You know, who's the right provider? You know, is it a dietitian? Is it, you know, someone like you that's holistic? Where do patients go? You know, I think possibly our physicians, our cancer surgeons may not have all that information. How do we help?
I am a nutritionist, and I would tell you to go to a dietitian or a nutritionist to be able to do that. And believe it or not, there's a lot of things online, okay, that you can look up and really research to see what's what. I would get a healthcare provider's opinion and get a dietitian, nutritionist involved. You can even go to sometimes they have classes on this. They could have classes at your local library or check out things in the area at your food store. Like if you have like someplace like a Whole Foods or Wegmans or something like that, they might have ideas in there as well. And to get yourself and go to your local library, there's books and books on this to help educate, because when you educate yourself, you're empowering yourself.
I agree. And you know, Mary Ann, with regard to, it's kind of our lineage here. If we've had a cancer diagnosis, we start to put this together. We get our patient to start thinking about this mind-body connection. We start thinking about a nutritional connection. You know, it's putting together, and again, I think the word you used is empowering these patients, putting together a team to help get them through this, handling many aspects, because this is a very multifaceted disease that it brings in many of our systems overall. So they need to put together a healthcare team to help get them through this. Do you find that may be very advantageous?
Yes, and a healthcare team, it's funny you say that, because one of the things that's left out, we're looking at the healthcare professional, but we also have caregivers at home that are dealing with this. And you want to be able to empower them as well. So if you're a caregiver, you can make yourself a checklist to empower your loved one's appointments by being like, say, an appointment participation where you're bringing their glasses or their hearing aids or comfort items. You could write down questions and concerns before you get to the doctor. You could create like a list of medications, compile a list of health conditions and like previous medical history and all, and have that in the notebook. It's the best thing that you could possibly have because you always could photocopy it and bring it to everywhere you're going. Then your caregiver can help you prepare for the appointment. They could help create emergency plans, like, you know, and in that emergency plan, the caregiver should have like medical information, like when was the exact diagnosis? What was the cancer stage? What were the medications given? And then keep that in the notebook, and also maybe have a medical kit on board. But then you have to make sure as a caregiver that your loved one understands their treatment, because that's on you. You're the caregiver. So it's important that your loved one understands and feels comfortable with their treatment, and you are part of that. And then you have to understand your loved one's mental health. So these could be some of the hardest days of your loved one's life. So you have to help them find joy and face this battle with a positive mindset. But you know what happens, Doc? The caregiver, they need to take care of themselves. And that's what happens because there's guilt. If you're a caregiver and you want to go for a walk, you have that guilt like, oh, what if something happens if I'm not here? you as a
sure.
caregiver, it comes with its own challenges, and sometimes it can be too much to handle. You could feel angry, frustrated, alone, sad, just like the person going through it. But you know what you have to remember? If you're a caregiver, you have to accept help. If somebody offers it, you take it. If you have a dog that needs walking or something and they want to help you do it, accept the help. And then be realistic about yourself. Not every caregiver is going to be perfect. They're not going to be. Focus on what you could provide instead and not on what you can't. And then you have to find social time for yourself. You know, a caregiver has
sure.
to do that. And most important, they have to maintain their own health. So they should set their own health goals and make it, you know, an effort to be active most days of the week. And most importantly, as a caregiver, you need to disconnect every day a few minutes to simply be alone and to breathe. And just take a few minutes of quiet time because it could shift your mood, be more positive outlook, and you're ready to take on being that
yeah.
caregiver. And I think that's one thing that is really overlooked. And, you know, besides looking at the person going through it, but it involves the whole family. It could be a spouse, a sibling, your children. Everybody's going through it with you.
And Marianne, how does the caregiver, let's say if it's, you know, a mother going through, you know, breast cancer, how does the daughter disconnect though? You know, I think you're right. It's important to disconnect from that stress and the pain your mother's having or difficulty with the treatment. How do you disconnect? What are the ways to disconnect that we can keep the daughter healthy to continue to maintain the lifestyle and help take care of her mom?
Well, she definitely, first of all, she has to take care of her own health by eating right and all, but to take a moment out each
sure.
day, whether it be meditation, whether it be walking, she might want to call a friend on the phone, you know, just to vent or just to have a different dialect during the day, you know, something else going on.
Yeah.
She could take time for herself. I don't know. She might have a famous, you know, TV show she likes to watch, you know, and just kind of check out for a little while or even taking a shower, you know, get
sure.
that energy off of you. And also,
and still maintain,
there's additional.
Yeah, and still maintain her own lifestyle as much as she can in helping
right, and
take
if they're
care.
Having a, right, and if they're having a hard time, there's additional resources. Like our phones are our best friends. There's all kinds of apps on there. There's one called Living With. It's an app, and it's a free
wow.
app, and it helps manage life with cancer. And that app, it builds a network of support and easily updates loved ones. It could track mood and pain and record sleeps and steps, stuff like that. And it's
wow.
there for you. So this way, it takes pressure off of you as the caregiver, and there's places to reach out. And that's the thing. Apps can be our phone to be our best friend when we need to.
Well, you know, it's amazing. I think what we've discovered here a little bit is this is a really a team approach to this patient that does have cancer, that overall, you know, beside the caregivers, the support they need nutritionally, their therapeutic doctors, their PAs, their nurse practitioners, it is a team that's necessary to get successful results in these circumstances, correct? Get through it, and then have everyone be able to maintain their lifestyle after all this. And that's, I think, one of the messages of today is that, you know, with regard to once you have that cancer diagnosis, what has to be put in place? And you've done it exquisitely with regard to the amount of work it's going to take to help get this patient through it and to make sure the family maintains it as well. You know, having said all that, Marianne, I think one word we had mentioned a little bit earlier in the discussion was the word hospice. What if we see that, you know, things aren't going well, the patient is starting to die, how do we help the family, you know, with getting into this hospice situation? What are the things that you would handle, you know, with a family if it seemed that the end was coming? Can you help us with that?
Absolutely. You may have to consider options that can be both difficult and stressful. And I always say the earlier the better, because this way you have a clear mind of what the path would be just in case this happens.
Yeah.
And although some people associate the word hospice with the idea of giving up, That is not the case. Hospice care works to bring a better quality of life to your loved one so that they can make the most of the stage in their life. And so communication and information are key. So you talk to your loved ones about hospice care as soon as you can, and knowing what they might want in the circumstance can give the caregiver and your family peace of mind right from the start, and it helps you make a plan just in case something like this happens. And it's not
and
all
Mary
about Ann, the medicine.
Yeah. You know, as far as, say, if I can interrupt, with regard to if we're in a situation where the health care is declining, do we discuss that with the patient? You know, are we frank with mom or dad or a loved one to say, you know, things aren't going well, we want you to be comfortable? How do you bring that up? You know, what would your approach to that be?
Well, like I said, it's easy to do. Sometimes what you could do is as soon as you get the diagnosis and it's digested, you know, and you're going on, it's a conversation
yes.
you could bring up casually while you're not in that desperate state to say, what are your thoughts? It's almost like when people leave, you know, even healthy people, willing, you know, living wills, you know, to their family,
sure.
you know, when they're setting something up. It's the same thing. You could talk to your loved one's primary care doctor, too, to see what they suggest. But also, it'll prevent you from having to talk about it at a more difficult time. So I suggest doing it early on. And the other thing is, it's not all about the medicine. Hospice care can address spiritual care that we were talking about, where they might want to involve a ceremony or sitting down to talk or saying goodbye. It could be family meetings to keep family members informed and help with their feelings and general support. You can get coordination of care with doctors and nurses and pharmacists and, unfortunately, funeral homes to work together just in case something happens. And then there's respite care to give family caregivers some needed rest and stuff. But what I do want to say is that one important thing that I think gets missed really quickly is you can help somebody pass peacefully and empower yourselves in that. If you're, like, you're using the mother and the daughter, if that daughter's there and your mom is laying down, you can turn around and lay at the foot of the bed and put your hand around their head and just put gently by their ears and just hold the energy there and talk to them and let them know that if they're struggling, it's okay if they go, that you're going to be okay. And give them peace and harmony. And just that gentle holding behind the ears can help their whole body relax and help them pass in peace. And that empowers you to know that they went in peace, not in upset, in a difficult time.
Wow. And, you know, as far as doing that, that takes a big person to do that. You know, with mom or dad dying, trying to do that. But I think the words are so important in allowing them to know that it's okay. It's very sad, very difficult times. And, you know, Mary Ann, after one passes, how do you deal with the family then, you know, with regard to the grief? Are there certain things you can do to help them get through the grief as well?
Yes, there are things that you could even take. There's flower essences, like Rescue Calm, you could find in a health food store. And they're drops that go right under your tongue, and you hold them for a couple seconds and then swallow. It's non-toxic, non-addicting, and it helps with the grief and the emotion right in the moment, the trauma that you're going through. You can speak to a counselor. You could speak with clergy. You know, you could talk to friends. It is a hard moment, but you're never prepared. I don't care how much you think you're prepared, you know, for somebody's loss.
Yes.
When it happens, but at least you know in your heart what you kind of set up for yourself, and it's not going to be easy. There's going to be grief. There's all kinds of stages of grief, and it's going to go on, and you're going to have your year of firsts without them, and that's the most difficult time, you know,
sure.
First birthdays, first anniversaries, holidays, and I don't think it's like they say time heals, but I think you learn to cope. You get some coping mechanisms. And just because they're gone, you know, you could even look for little signs. People say you could see a cardinal in the tree. You could see a white feather at your feet. Or you sometimes
yeah.
you could just feel them around you and talk to them like they're there, because you never know if they're there. They might be listening to you. So, you know, just because somebody's gone on the physical plane they're still around. And look for those little signs, because even if you find pennies on the street, they're pennies from heaven. Look at it that way. And somebody's letting you know, I'm still watching over you.
Wow. You know, that's the topic of another show with regard to that spirituality and crossing over. But I think we touched this very, very well today. Mark, do you have any more questions for us?
Yeah, let me take two quick ones, and then we'll wrap it because we're up against time. Gary from Sugarland, Texas, who's been on this show a couple times, basically says, when it gets to hospice, when it gets to carrying one of those oxygen tanks, I figure, and it's probably with your knowledge and expertise, that the end is near. Is that true? That's a great question.
Yeah,
it can
be. Pick that, go ahead.
Yes, please do. Please do.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, it depends on what the maladies are. But indeed, if one is having the oxygen, they're having trouble breathing, exchanging air, probably very, very true that, again, their brain is going to give out, their heart's going to give out. So it could be very close to the end. But that could be a sign that things are, your patient's in trouble, your loved one's in trouble. And so, like Marianne has said, let's make sure we're prepared for that and prepare the rest of the family and the rest of the caregivers. What do you want to add to that, Marianne? Anything?
I think you hit it right on the head. You did. That's exactly what I would have said. Yeah.
Thank you. Go ahead, Mark.
Darren from Wichita Falls comes in and talking about cancers. How different are these cancers? Does one spread rapidly than others? Skin cancer, prostate cancer, breast cancer? Well, that's a great question, the cancer spread.
Yeah, it's a great question. If I can, Marianne, pick that up a little bit. Yeah. You know, with regard to cancers, the big thing that we look at is something called cell type. What cell is this that's the cancer? Once you know the cell type, then you're able to determine what kind of a behavior this cancer has, because each cell type has a different behavior. And indeed, you know, there are skin cancers that don't spread. They just stay very localized. That's called a basal cell cancer. You also could have a squamous cell cancer. That's a skin cancer indeed that can spread, that can go to the lymph nodes, but that's determined on cell type. You know, with breast cancer, there is different types of breast cancer, Mark. And again, depending on what it is, thyroid cancer is a similar way. There's four types of thyroid cancer. Three of them are relatively benign. The fourth is highly aggressive. So it does depend on, again, cell type. And again, the more aggressive a cancer is, the greater the chance it's going to spread. And that word is metastasized. When it goes to other organs, the lymph nodes, the liver, the kidneys, the brain, it destroys other tissue and it destroys our beingness and it takes life. So it does depend on cell type. Thank you. Go ahead, Mark.
Let me take one quick one so we can wrap this up. Out of Corvallis, Oregon, Steve says, yeah, we can send people to the moon. No cure for cancer.
Yeah, I think Steve has talked to us before. And, you know, as far as I think, Steve, yes, we can send people to the moon, but we are finding cures to certain types of cancer. And indeed, it's a matter the longer we're living here, the more research we're doing, the more information we're gathering, we're trying to, of course, take care of them and to heal our patients. And the research today, for the most part, is trying to find out what's the cause of these. What is the agent that seems to be the cause of these cancers? And I think that's the secret of the future. If we can determine the cause, what causes these cells to change, to become atypical, to start to go ahead and multiply out of control, I think we'll far be ahead of the game of cure of cancer. Marianne, do you want to add something to that?
Yeah, I just empower yourself and know that just because you got that diagnosis, it does not always mean a death sentence, that you can empower yourself and practice ways to relax, share your feelings honestly with friends, keep a journal. When faced with a difficult decision, list the pros and cons, find a spiritual support group, set aside time to be alone, and keep yourself involved with work and leisure activities, and be ready to say no. This time is to focus on you. And you do all of that, you can empower yourself every single day.
Well,
excellent.
We've wrapped it up. Marianne, let everybody know how they can get a hold of you.
Sure. You can visit me on my website at neoszoe.com, N-E-O-S-Z-O-E.com, or they can email me at marianne@neoszoe.com, or they can even find me on the under Marianne Costello on Facebook, and you could even call the office at 732-713-0123.
She also has Barrel TV, but she's not Barron all, Doctor.
Okay. Well, Meryl, so we missed her this go round. People can get a hold of me if I can, Mark, GJRMD308@outlook.com. And again, I think a closing statement, Mark, if I have 1 second, is, again, a man should consider his health his greatest human blessing. And our health is so important. So I thank Marianne Costello. Mark Mancini, thank you. I'd like to continue the discussion of cancer next week and the following week. I have several more doctors who will talk to us about different types of cancer. Marianne, I'd like you back in a couple of weeks to talk again about all this, if you could.
Absolutely. Anytime.
Thank you. Mark, close the show.
Well, for you in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, her in Rahway, New Jersey, yours truly in hot Los Angeles, catch the archive version, blogtalkradio.com/ next week. We'll be back next week, same time, same channel, with another segment. Till then, have a blessed and safe weekend, and thanks for listening.
Mark, thank you. Listeners,